Welcome to Inspiring Health with Dr. Roxana Gabster, President and CEO of WellSpan Health, as she hosts candid conversations about organizational culture, value, and other pressing issues we face in healthcare and business today.
Today on Inspiring Health, I'm sitting down with Dr. Anwar Shahal, Director for the Center of Inherited Cardiovascular Diseases at WellSpan Health, and the principal investigator for the Gene Health Project at WellSpan, to discuss the importance of personalized medicine, our new partnership with Helix, the nation's leading population genomics organization, and the future of patient care delivery. Welcome, Dr. Shahal. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
I know you were born and raised in England, and you did your medical training there. So please share with our listeners more about your career journey and what led you to WellSpan Health.
I'll give you the short version then. So yes, born and raised in the north of England, actually 20 miles south from the original Lancaster. Went to medical school in Yorkshire. So, ironically, I'm in York today, the White Rose County, as it's known,
or
God's own country in England. Went to medical school there, and then after medical school, I did my residency at King's College London, and then cardiovascular fellowship training, which was a clinician investigator program, and included 5 years of clinical training, as well as time out to do a PhD. I went to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, and spent a long time there doing my PhD in an AHA-funded postdoctoral fellowship. Went back to England, finished the last bit of training there, and decided to do my advanced training in clinical cardiac electrophysiology at the University of Pennsylvania. Finished that in 2020. Joined the team in August 2020 in the midst of the pandemic, starting based out on the Lancaster on the east side, as well as here on the York campus. And we've just gone from strength to strength since.
Yeah, what an amazing journey. It's hard to believe. Well, we're so fortunate to have you here at WellSpan, leading the development of one of our very newest and most innovative programs, of course, precision medicine. It's been a dream of ours for a really long time. So as we both know, precision medicine is a very cutting-edge approach for managing the health of patients, many times proactively and for things they might not even know they have. Treating various disease conditions based on your genes, your behaviors, and your environment. Can you tell us more about the importance of population genomics and just its value in personalized medicine and how this new approach to managing care could maybe benefit our communities?
Sure. So first off, I think precision medicine, whilst genomics is a really important component of that, precision is more than just genomics and actually encompasses a lot more within there. So you'll hear these buzzwords of, you know, omics being thrown around. I like to define that for people that gene or genetic is sort of one gene or one thing at a time. Genomics is saying the whole of someone's entire genome. With that, actually expands out into what do the genes do? They encode for things called proteins. Proteins are what our bodies are made of. So you could then say proteomics, which would mean the entire protein. But then we have all these bugs that live on us and inside us, and we call that the microbiome. So you'll hear all this ohms and omics thrown around, but it's taking all of that. Taking someone's electronic health record, taking someone's wearable technologies, your Fitbit data or a home ECG monitoring system, feeding that in to be able to follow real time what actually happens. And then how do you translate that back to the patient to deliver on what the promises of precision medicine are? Your question asked really about population genomics, and that's a crucial component of that. And I'll make the distinction here of precision medicine versus precision health. Precision medicine is somebody sort of with established disease and how you would do that and tailor, personalize the treatment for that individual. Precision health, the difference is we're now going to preventative. So before you get disease, could we find, for example, the genes that could be driving that and then evaluate them further? The buzz around the population genomic level is that we've now got to essentially the dream of trying to do a genome in under $1,000. We're sort of there. There's a few caveats to all of that in terms of quality and what is actually usable. But we've got to a point where we're actually able to offer that at large scale. And the big challenges we now face is how do we make sense of all of that data? How do we get the information from the data?
That's so amazing. It's hard to believe that we've come that far. I still remember my very first molecular biology talk, you know, long time ago, went to a conference and I'd never heard of molecular biology before. I didn't learn it in nursing school because I trained before that. So it's just all of this is so fascinating to me. Well, earlier this year, we announced a partnership with Helix. That's a nationally known company and thought leader in population genomics, and they selectively partner with health systems across the country to operationalize large-scale clinical research initiatives. And through that partnership, we recently launched our Gene Health Project at WellSpan, which is a large research effort that's going to go for 4 years, collecting DNA samples from over 100,000 volunteers and community members across all of South Central Pennsylvania. So exciting. Can you share with our listeners more about the purpose of that project and how we think it supports our goal at WellSpan to be recognized as a leader in personalized and precision medicine?
Absolutely. So you're right. It's an exciting time. And I can sometimes find it very hard to curb my enthusiasm about it all because, you have an idea, you have a vision, and then to see it actualize is really it's something that has to be celebrated. And, you know, I want to use this opportunity to thank the incredible team here that have helped us actually get to where we are. We chose Helix. We looked at a number of partners. There's a number of pluses with going with Helix that we think really stand out. The first is that Helix was a vendor to Mayo Clinic. So Mayo Clinic was a client. Mayo Clinic was so impressed by Helix, they actually decided to become an investor. And when I'd reached out, I still have, an affiliation with Mayo where I still do research, and then reached out to people for advice. And they'd said Helix are absolutely fantastic. So we looked at other groups as well, and that's, just good due diligence. And what we liked about Helix and what they offer that stands out is first, it really is a partnership. So there's never a case of us or them. We really feel like we are in this together for the future of our patients and the communities that we serve. The other real advantage is that we're actually delivering whole exome sequencing that's CLIA CAP approved, meaning that we can use it for clinical, and it's on a whole genome backbone. And that has saved us a lot of time and potential problems. For example, although it's a research project, if we were to get only research-grade whole exome sequencing back and we wanted to return positive results to our patients, we'd actually have to put them through retesting of what's CLIA/CAP approved, which can cost a lot of money for the patient for out-of-pocket expenses, but for payers as well. And some people may argue, well, what's the benefit of that? What's, there's always a back and forth. We've always got to be, fiscally responsible, especially in the current climate, where we're all dealing with the rising cost of inflation, that we have to be very judicious in how we give out these resources and how we use them. So that's why the other thing that makes it advantageous is that they're focused on a certain number of things where we think there's sort of better bang for buck, if I can use that term. And so they're the reasons we think, partnering with Helix are things that tie in with our vision and our values.
That's wonderful. Well, certainly we believe they've been a great partner so far. So it's very good news for our patients. We know that the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention has identified the top three medical conditions with the most evidence to support early detection and intervention. And we know that 1 in 75 individuals are affected by one of these conditions. 90% of those people, though, go undiagnosed. So genetic screenings and treatment for these conditions really can improve outcomes, which in turn advances our healthier community goal. How will we use what we've learned through the Gene Health Project at WellSpan to treat the CDC's Tier 1 genetic conditions, including hereditary breast and ovarian cancer, Lynch syndrome, and familial hypercholesterolemia?
So you rightly point out CDC Tier 1. So the CDC goes through conditions that has Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3. These are conditions that have been picked out that are frequent enough in the population and have incredible impact. I mean, cancer, potential loss of life, familial hypercholesterolemia can cause multiple problems, including atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease very early in life. Across the body, stroke, heart attacks, peripheral arterial disease, aortic aneurysms. FH, if we just take that as the example, affects 1 in 175 now. when I was at medical school, we were taught it was one in 500. Then as I was leaving medical school, we were taught it's probably closer to one in 350. But actually with population genomics, we've realized it's probably one in 175. That is no longer rare. If we take the NIH's definition of rare, that's one in 2,000. So one in 175, that means there's a lot of us in this office building who could easily have familial hypercholesterolemia. Why have we chosen these conditions? Because we think that one in 75, which is overall the cancer and the FH, means that actually we're going to identify individuals that we can help. What are we returning to them? Which I think our listeners will really appreciate, is that we're going to return, you know, a clinical result from a research project that says you are at an increased risk because we've identified these genes, which they may not have known about had they not have been a participant. What usually happens on the patient journey is that you don't know any of this. We know we get our DNA from our parents. So technically, you could blame your parents for all of it. really, we only know what we have once a disease manifests. So in other words, once you feel something, a symptom or a doctor picks up a sign, puts all that together and a diagnosis is made, then we do the genetics. So where we're going from is disease to gene. Here we're saying, look, we're going gene before we get disease. Yes. And can we therefore intervene at the right time? So what have we done? And I want to reassure not only our patient listeners, but our providers, that what we've done here is set out a pathway. The big worry people have, you know, they say change is the only constant. Human beings naturally are averse to change. And they like their routines, and I'm guilty. I'm very much guilty. My wife would agree with that. We have set out a plan here where we have a care pathway. So if you join as a volunteer and you have a positive result, you will then be handed off to the appropriate care team and will then undergo care as you would part of standard of care and going through the usual process to get approval for all of that. But we're hoping we're going to save lives with that.
Yeah, I can't imagine that we won't if we really can identify people who have a gene that could create cancer at any moment, probably, and they didn't know that. So it gives them the opportunity, I think, to be able to make decisions that could affect their own health. So that's really wonderful. Well, on a broader scale, we know that these screenings will also allow WellSpan to have access to a pretty large genomic database unique to our patient population. So what does that mean for research and discovery?
So I've always made the argument that high quality clinical care and research are synergistic. They go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. If you want the latest cutting edge care and treatments, you have to be engaged with research. That's what this really allows us to do. How could it benefit our patients? Well, the first is, you know, we've mentioned that in this first phase of 100,000 over the next 4 years, we have deliberately made it open to everybody. And by that, I mean, we need to be inclusive. One of the issues, just like many areas in genomic research, has been that most participants tend to be white. So we don't have enough non-white participants. And that's a problem because not only is it sort of accessibility to health, but it also means interpreting the genetic data is more difficult to do because there's no baseline for the non-white population. So right. This study being open to all for 100,000, there's an advantage in that we're opening it out to the communities that we serve. Next, in terms of discoveries, it forms part of the Helix Research Network. We're now a founder member along with our other partner organizations. And that means we can then pool our resources together to be able to analyze that data, 100,000 from our institution, 100,000 from, you know, let's say health partners, or 100,000 from Renown Health or MUSC. This means that, you know, they say power lies in numbers in research.
Yeah.
And statistics get better once you have better numbers. That's the advantage of it, that we're able to then say, let's say, for example, look at our population and we find a certain gene is associated with a certain disease. We then say, well, is that spurious or is that something that's a real signal? Now you can reach out to, let's say, colleagues at MUSC and say, we want to test that. And they've already got it set up and it's aligned with what we've got in place, means the time for discovery is very much shortened. What do we hope long-term might come from this? wouldn't it be great if we could develop the next PCSK9 inhibitor that's used for dyslipidemias? That's the hope, that we're going to help unravel some of the biology of disease. That will then give us some targets with our partners to potentially develop new treatments, as well as focusing on the preventative aspects. I really want to bring something that I've said to our partners that we should do. We have our electronic health records, we have our genomics, but we really need to include things like our imaging, our ECG data, because if we could combine that, and this is a term that I've coined as one of my small claims, is quantitative phenomics. Let me explain what I mean by that. We talk about genomics and genotype, and then we talk about what does the individual in front of you have, and the term is phenotype. So that could mean, you know, does somebody have an extra finger, for example? That's actually more frequent than people might realize. And these are things that give us clues as to what may be driving that genetically. Well, the problem is if we say, let's say, for example, a condition called Marfan syndrome, patients have, the classic description is arachnodactyly, which means spider-like long, thin fingers. And I'm always accused I've got those spidery long fingers. But what does that mean for one provider to another? There's no set definition on what to say. And here, if we could take, let's say, for example, their imaging, their ECG, and quantify that, there's things that computers can see that we can't see. We're limited as humans.
Yeah.
So if we can combine genomics with quantitative phenomics, this could just open up doors that we haven't thought about. I told you, curb my enthusiasm. So, you know, if it's gotten a little bit ahead of itself, that's something you see Helix as a partner. I'm able to go to them and say, hey, this is what we want to do. We have a roundtable discussion once a month with the other principal investigators from each site. And when I've said this, everybody said, this is genius. We should do it. So this is how we take it to the next level. That's data that already exists in our system, and we're not harnessing it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Gosh, there's just so much to this, or could be, as we move through this process, and hopefully to the benefit of our patients. And I really appreciate you talking about the non-white population. Part of our mission is care for all. And we all know that in research, generally, there's a dearth of non-white patients who enroll in trials. So if there's any way that we can support that and make that more applicable to more populations, that will be an amazing outcome. So this is certainly an industry game changer, Dr. Shahal. It will truly transform how patients receive care and information, but recruiting 100,000 volunteers to participate over the next 4 years sounds kind of challenging. So what's our plan to educate and encourage volunteers to participate?
Well, you've picked out the Achilles heel. The thing with research, especially human research, is that the hardest bit, which is sometimes the elusive obvious, it's not really, you sort of know it, but no one points it out. My mentor, Viren Summers at Mayo, this was one of the first sort of lessons that he gave me, is that no one will tell you this. The hardest thing is recruitment. And if you can get that right, everything else will follow. And he's absolutely right. And you're right to bring that up, because 100,000 will certainly induce palpitations in some people. But I want to share with you our strategy. We've thought about that. We've thought carefully about it. We work with UK Biobank, and we have colleagues within UK Biobank that really sort of spearheaded this, along with Dan Roden at Vanderbilt, who set up their biobank many, many years ago. And Dan, you know, who's become a mentor, actually had vision 30 years ago to say, we need to do this. We've been lucky in that we've been able to reach out to these people. These are our now friends and colleagues who have shared with us their experience, what they got right, what went wrong, so that we can do this better. And that's really, I think, a hallmark of really decent people. They don't want you to make the mistakes that they made, and they're very open and honest. So UK Biobank recruited 500,000 people from 2006 to 2010. They had an army of study coordinators, and you can imagine that was, you know, military level organizational plan to get those individuals through. And to this day, you know, we have to thank those participants because of the discoveries that are coming from that work. Well, if we look at what the US Biobank, and Dan won't like me calling it that, but NIH All of Us, NIH All of Us is what came out of President Obama's Precision Medicine Initiative, and this is recruiting 1 million individuals in the US. They also took those lessons and they said, how can we do this in a way that works? So what we've done is looked at all of those and said, right, how can we tailor it to do it here? Helix and us and our partner organizations, we share best ways that we can recruit 100,000 people in a time-efficient manner. But here's the way we're going to do it. The first is keep it simple. Keep it real easy for your participants to be able to enroll. We are inviting people digitally wherever possible. The digital part of it links people to a website. The website, you go through the consent process. Soon we'll have a video. At the moment it's script, but soon we'll have a video that individuals can watch. There'll be a little test out to show they understand it. And then they can digitally sign it. That then gets recorded. That then gets digitally sent back to Epic and placed in their electronic health record. A little flag appears so that we always know this is a Helix participant, because individuals could be in multiple studies. So you need to know those sorts of things. And then that will trigger a blood draw that could either be done when the individual goes for their next clinical draw, or even better, schedule a date and time for when you want to go. And what we're aiming to do is get that done within 10 to 15 minutes of the time that's scheduled. We want to make it as easy as possible for individuals. That sample then goes to Helix. Helix process it, extract the DNA, sequence it, and then make that data available in the cloud. That then integrates with our electronic health record. So we've thought about it very carefully. I know I've gone into detail, but we know we have to keep it simple, make it very easily accessible, and make as much of this as digital as possible. That massively reduces the burden on all of us trying to help our participants get into the study. I will add to that, we also know many of the communities we serve may not be digitally savvy or may not use digital technologies. So again, back to our inclusion and being open, accessible, inclusive, is that we also have the good old-fashioned paper way if it's needed. So that will be there for anyone who wants to enroll but doesn't have access to the internet or digital tools. So we've thought about this very carefully. Will we have some kinks that we need to iron out? Sure. And that's why we've been doing our dress rehearsal to try and get these things ironed out for when we're ready for our official community-wide launch.
Wow, that's really amazingly detailed. And I will say, I know a couple of people that have entered already from the leadership team, and they said the process was completely smooth. So far anyway, it seems to be working pretty well.
Just to add to that, we've got some feedback that people have enjoyed the fun side of this. So although we mentioned CDC Tier 1, there's some fun stuff that comes from this. The fun stuff is, I'm sure everyone wants to know what their ancestry really is. So they're getting fun things back, like you could be part Ukrainian, you could be part Mongolian. And so people are getting this stuff back. And we've been getting messages saying, hey, I always wondered that. It was great to actually get that back. And then some other fun stuff like, am I, you know, sensitive to gluten and things like that. So there's a little bit more that we're giving people. And I call this recreational genetics. You know, it's the stuff that families enjoy and like to sit around the table and discuss. So I actually went through NIH, all of us, as a volunteer myself. This one didn't surprise me in that some North Indian ancestry and Mediterranean. My father's always claimed that Alexander the Great is our ancestor. And my genetics show this 20% of my blood comes from that region. But the one that really threw me, and you're going to laugh at this, 6% Ukrainian Polish. So
oh,
I was like,
kidding.
Ukrainian Polish? I just don't see that. But I was telling Charlie DiComo.
Yeah.
And Charlie said, Silk Road, Chahal, Silk Road. All I'm saying, there was some mixing going on then.
No question. Oh, gosh. Well, this is certainly one of the most exciting developments in our system to provide more personalized care for our communities. What do you think are some other advances in healthcare that you think will contribute to care delivery in the future, if you could tease any of those?
So as we've alluded to here, you know, precision, lots of people are using that word, but you'll also hear AI and machine learning, deep learning, machine learning, basically utilizing, you know, technology where it's at now allows us to be able to process these large amounts of data that we couldn't do before at a speed that we couldn't do before. So I think back to what I said earlier with the sort of quantitative phenomics and the genomics, we're going to get to some form of real-time version of that. So it could be, let's pick a common example, atrial fibrillation. This is the most common heart rhythm problem. It affects about 2% of the US population. That's about 6.5 million people. Very debilitating, causes heart failure, causes stroke. That's the biggest one that none of us want our patients to have. We knew that there was some sort of familial component to it, but genetic testing clinically was a contraindication. Guidelines got updated last year, and atrial fibrillation now got added as something to do genetic testing on. If you talk to my clinical colleagues in cardiology, they'll tell you we see atrial fibrillation, especially in younger patients, in families. How do you connect those dots? Well, rather than somebody developing atrial fibrillation, heart failure, and stroke, well, what if you could pick that out just using a normal, quote-unquote, ECG? That's where I think the power is going to lie. People are adopting wearable technologies more and more. You can get a smartphone and put an ECG monitor on it. You could get a Fitbit or something similar to that. You're exercising. It notices your heart rate jumps up and it's irregular and says AF may be detected. All that information gathered into the electronic health records combined together, I think the future is just going to be picking these things up before they actually happen, before something debilitating like a stroke. The challenge for us as clinicians, as scientists, as educators, will be how do we make sense of all of that so we're not dealing with what is essentially a benigner version of that versus what is very advanced disease and not focusing all our efforts here where it's just going to worry and upset people and not bring any benefit. But the people here in the middle that we can intervene on early, that's, I think we've got to figure that out. And that really takes a mature conversation between all parties that are invested in this, which includes patients, includes payers, it includes research funding bodies, it includes healthcare administrators, it includes the providers on the ground. That's where I think the future really lies. Can we get to a point where we could do that? That to me is sort of, you know, intellectual heaven, I would say.
Yeah, that's amazing. That would be so useful to so many people. And as you said, depending on where you intervene on that pathway, you can either create more anxiety or you can create real benefit and value for people's health. So really, really interesting. Well, that's all the time we have for today. So thank you, Dr. Shahal, for joining me on this episode of Inspiring Health. The Gene Health Project at WellSpan is a priority for our system, and with you at the forefront, I'm confident it will be a success. So thanks for this revolutionary work to help achieve health and well-being for our populations across South Central Pennsylvania. For more information on the Gene Health Project at WellSpan, go to wellspan.org/genehealthproject. I hope you all join me for the next episode of Inspiring Health.